Alrighty, let's get started.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to the Shinecast, where we're starting conversations around mental health, mental illness, how we cope, and how we thrive throughout our journeys. I'm Jordy Lesgard.
And I'm Linnea Villacania. The Shinecast may touch on potentially triggering material. Take care of yourself while listening and know that it's okay to take a break or skip onto the next episode. Check out the episode description for full details on what we'll be talking about. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Today, we're joined by Sonia Katali. Sonia is in her fifth year at the University of Guelph, getting a double major in biology and psychology. Damn. I didn't even make it through like a major in psychology alone. And hopes to continue her studies by studying a master's of clinical and counseling psychology. Hi, Sonia.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm excited to be here.
What kind of brought you into studying biology and psychology at the same time?
Well, I started my undergrad as just a biology student. I thought I was on the path to medical school and then had a really hard time with biology. I really like parts of it, but it was the chemistry and physics and all the other stuff that came along with it that was just not my cup of tea. And I realized I was really most interested in working in mental health as like a subsection within healthcare, and so decided to add psychology as a major. That's how I ended up in both of them. Looking back, I wish I had just started in psychology, but I'm kind of grateful for the biology background. It's opened up some different opportunities. So yeah,
that's so awesome. Did something lead you into psychology?
To be honest, I didn't take any psychology type classes in high school, and then my first semester I took Psych 1000 and absolutely loved it and have been taking psychology courses every semester. The decision to add psychology as a full major came from kind of my own personal experiences with mental health and the mental health world and my involvement on campus.
And what was like the mental health journey that kind of led you to that? What, like, do you have personal experience in that?
Yeah, I do. So I struggled with my mental health in high school because I underwent a spinal fusion, and that kind of physical struggle and having major surgery and the recovery of that really kind of translated into a mental struggle. I had a lot of issues with my body because the surgery was for scoliosis, which is an abnormal curvature of the spine for anyone who hasn't heard of it before. It came with a lot of physical impairment, and basically my disorder was very visible to other people. And so that created a lot of insecurity for me and ended up triggering a spiral into a depressive episode. Coming to university and being away from home and a bit of distance from some of the other kind of personal things that I was going through really helped. And then after that high, it was kind of followed by another low. And so I started reaching out to different clubs on campus, the most prominent of them for me being jack.org, which I'm still involved in. And I started as a volunteer for them and kind of learned more about the landscape of mental health in young adults in Canada, and some of the gaps in the system and just the different ways that you can get involved. And that really inspired me to go that direction academically as well.
Yeah. I'm wondering what it was like, because I can imagine that was a pretty intense experience. So I wondered if you might be able to walk us through exactly what, well, one, like what a spinal fusion surgery is, and then also like what it was like for you, like before heading into it.
Absolutely. In retrospect, it's kind of a really cool surgery, which I can appreciate now. So prior to my surgery, I had kind of a hunchback appearance. One set of ribs were really protruding out from one side. So it was very visibly noticeable to other people. And studies show that actually body issues like body dysmorphia and that sort of thing, or even eating disorders, are very prevalent. They occur in higher numbers in teens who deal with scoliosis just because of the physical challenges that you're met with. So I was very insecure about my body. I wasn't eating the way I should. I was really trying to compensate and cover things up with baggy clothing and really socially withdrawing in whatever way that I could. So I was very unhappy at that point. And I very much associated this surgery with kind of fixing all those problems for me. I consider myself to be very lucky. I had a very successful surgery. I was a patient at SickKids Hospital. It was an 11-hour surgery.
Oh my gosh.
And
were you awake for that, or?
No, I was completely out, luckily. And actually the week following the surgery, I have no recollection of because the amount of medication that I was on in the hospital. So yeah, I don't have my mobility anymore. I don't have kind of torsion mobility either. Mm-hmm. So it was a big learning curve after, because you really have to kind of start from the beginning. Your body feels different than it did before. So I felt like I was in someone else's body, like walking. For the first 2 months, I brushed my teeth with like a bucket, an intermediate bucket, because I couldn't get myself down to the sink.
Yeah.
Like silly things like that you don't think about, mm-hmm. getting in and out of bed, or being able to turn over in bed. I wasn't able to do that by myself for the first 2 months. Mm-hmm. So just like small things that you never think that you're going to have to relearn.
Yeah, that must have been really hard with, especially with like waking up and going to bed, because that's like one of those daily things that I guess you kind of take for granted, right? Mm-hmm. So like, it must have been like, pretty challenging to handle.
It definitely was. And as a 17-year-old, like a moody teenager, I definitely didn't want, like, you know, I needed somebody's help to like wash my hair or shave my mm-hmm. legs, or like simple things that you're like, ah, like, why is my sister doing this for me? Or like your mom is in the bathroom with you. And so it was difficult. And I had it between my grade 11 and my grade 12 year. So it all kind of compounded with like going back to school and trying to apply to university, and going back to school was a whole other challenge because I couldn't hold my own books. Mm-hmm. Especially, and I just felt a little outcast because I wasn't able to sit in a chair for long enough. So I'd be getting up in the middle of class, and then you just feel like weird, right?
Like an alien. Well, especially in high school, like one thing's different about you and it's just the worst thing.
Exactly. So it was, that whole year is kind of a blur, but that was kind of the beginning of my struggles with mental health. The issue with that was that there was something else that I could attribute it to. So I never really started my journey with, diagnosis and mental illness, because at the time, I considered it all, and doctors and stuff in my life considered it to all be situational.
Mm.
When now I could see, you know, some of it was, patterns and symptoms that I see now as part of my mental illness that I probably could have handled differently at the time had I known then what I know now.
So like when you think this is going to solve all my problems, but then you're like, oh, I actually have to do more work for myself.
Exactly. So I thought this surgery was going to be a fix everything, a miracle cure. And then it wasn't. And in fact, I felt even worse after, which was weird because I had this body that was suddenly, you know, what I wanted my body to look like. I was mm-hmm. Standing up straight, and, you know, I had something that I had wanted for so long. I wasn't happy with it. I still felt insecure, maybe even more insecure than I did before. My kind of negative coping habits with my eating and sleeping and socially withdrawing all stayed the same or increased. So it wasn't the miracle cure that I thought it was going to be. It wasn't the root of my problems.
I mean, like, the first week after treatment was kind of a blur, like, thankfully.
Yes.
But then those 2 months getting used to your new body, I guess, and kind of dealing with that body dysphoria, did you find ways to cope?
To be honest, those 2 months, I didn't. I wasn't coping. I went back to school, but there were many days that I didn't make it to school. So it was kind of a longer process of finding those ways of coping, and was more gradual. My coping really didn't improve or change until I came to university.
Really?
Yeah. So it was a year of, like, not a great state, because then my academics were impacted, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to get into university. And I had, at the same time as going through that, a close family member of mine started really struggling with their mental health and with substance use. So it was just kind of like, felt like the sky was falling on me. Coming to university and being on my own, and having to kind of build a schedule for myself and meet new people and be in a completely new environment really helped me.
Kind of getting that independence back, hey?
Yes, that's for sure.
So when you say that you had negative coping strategies, like, what were they?
I would say at that period of time, my eating and my sleeping habits were really not healthy. So I didn't restrict my eating in the sense of, like, wanting to look a certain way, but I did restrict my eating in a sense of, it was something that I could control at the time, when I felt like I really couldn't control anything else. I was just, like, not giving my body enough nutrients to go off of. So I constantly felt, like, nauseous and faint, and just kind of sat in that. rather than doing anything to make myself feel better. I wasn't sleep, like, I would stay up until like 4 o'clock in the morning, and then try to go to school at 7 and, you know, make it through like first period and then be back home and sleeping through the day, which was obviously not healthy. And I would say, like, most of my coping at that time is very in line with a, you know, typical depressive episode, which I wasn't being treated for at the time. I was being treated for in my surgery recovery. It was stuff like that, just like loss of motivation and like a real hopelessness surrounding it. You know, I wanted to do well in my classes, but I felt like I just like really couldn't motivate myself to do the work. And then I was upset when I got a negative results back, and then, oh, that's now I'm not going to get into university, and it just kind of like catastrophizes and spirals and like gets to the overwhelming point where you just like don't want to do anything. I just want to lie under my covers and stay here.
Yeah, like it's something I've personally noticed with like major surgeries or like major illnesses, where kind of depression or anxiety is kind of seen as a symptom of treating that problem. And so it's not addressed in its own right, where I feel that it should be.
I totally agree with everything you just said there. I think what was happening for me is I was experiencing that normal discomfort and, you know, low that might come with recovering from a major surgery. But it was going beyond that for me. Coming to university.
At what point did you decide, like, did you figure out that, you know, you couldn't just attribute all of your symptoms on your surgery?
Yeah, to be honest, that happened during my next episode. It wasn't until I really started struggling again, and it was at a time where I felt like things were going well for me. I had what I wanted. I had no big stressors in my life. Like, everything was fine, and I was still upset and sad and not happy. And then that was kind of the light bulb moment of like, okay, there's something else going on here, and maybe I have to address this as its own issue and look at this differently.
You mentioned like starting university was kind of where there was a turning point and you were able to find maybe strategies to help, or you kind of got your independence back. What specifically in university really helped you?
The physical change of scenery really helped. I don't want to bash on high school, but
I think somebody, everyone wants to bash on high school.
I was somebody who really did not enjoy high school. I actually went to a specialized sports school and I like can't even walk in a straight line. I was the least athletic person ever. And I really just struggled with kind of finding a place that felt good to me in high school. Just being away from that was, you know, something in itself. At the time, my home life was a little complicated, but I have a great family who are my biggest support system, and I'm always happy to be back here with them. But at the time, I really needed, I think, to see that I could do something on my own, especially after a year of needing to kind of ask everyone for help.
Oh, definitely.
Just being in my own space and taking control of my academics and meeting people and joining things just because it was what I wanted to do, I think was huge for me. Even though at the time I wasn't thinking about it like that, I was just happy to be in university because I didn't think I was going to get in. That was huge, I think, knowing that I could do something for myself. And if we're being honest, like my first semester especially, was very rocky. I failed 2 classes and called my mom and was like,
get me out of here.
But I think even that was good for me. I think I kind of tested myself and I needed to like push through that and fail and see that like the world will keep spinning. And, you know, 5 years later, I'm still here, still trying to finish my undergrad, but you know, it doesn't matter. I think it kind of like proved to myself that I'm resilient and that when things don't go exactly how I planned them, you just keep going. You figure out something else.
That's so awesome to hear. Because you joined jack.org at the university, correct?
I did. So at the point where I joined jack.org, it was end of my second year. I started volunteering and then I joined as an executive in my third year. And that was actually sparked by kind of at the end of my second year, beginning of my third year, I really started to struggle with my mental health again. I've always dealt with anxiety, but it's never really caused any distress to me. And at that point, it was starting to really impact my day-to-day life. And I entered another depressive episode. And so I went to actually a stress buster that was being held at Christmas time through jack.org and talked to people there. Mm-hmm. And decided that I was going to start volunteering just to learn more. It's been a huge part of my journey, but it was my reason for getting involved, honestly, was that I was just kind of testing the waters of resources and clubs and other things that were out there because I wasn't doing great myself.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what jack.org is and what they do?
Absolutely. So jack.org is a national nonprofit. It is youth-to-youth education. It has 3 different branches. There are Jack Summits, which unite youth from regional areas or national areas, and you hear speakers. And then there are Jack Chapters, which is what I'm part of at the University of Guelph. So high schools and universities around Canada can have their own chapter, and they kind of run jack.org curriculum through their events and stress busters on campus. And then there are Jack Talks, which are educational presentations that speakers go to other schools, high schools and universities around Canada, and talk to other students about mental health. So I'm actually a Jack Talk speaker as well. There you go to your first Jack Talk and it's like 400 high school students staring back at you and you're like,
oh my gosh,
high school.
not again.
not again. But I love that I could be there for other students, but being able to talk about my story and teach people about mental health has also reinforced a lot of important lessons for me.
So what was it like for your first kind of speaking engagement, especially since it's a topic of like mental health and you're personally connected to that topic?
So I was like terrified the entire drive there. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And then we walk in and it was so scary. I was standing in the middle of this high school gym and they give me a mic and we have like a PowerPoint that goes along with it. And you're just like looking out and you're like, oh, I'm that assembly speaker that nobody wants to hear this morning. And I'm like in my Jack Dodd t-shirt and with sweating. I feel like the first time I just kind of blacked out and I was talking and yeah. I don't know if I got all my points out. But times after, it's been great. I really enjoy it. It's given me the opportunity to like gain a lot of new knowledge and learn a lot of cool things, and be able to get comfortable speaking about my own journey too has been like a kind of silver lining of that has been great for me.
So what are kind of some of the lessons, like you said, like trial by fire, going in, doing a public speaking engagement, like. Is there any like lessons from that first time that kind of stuck with you? Like any, or did it kind of like assuage your concerns for the future? Like,
yeah, I would say lessons I learned from that first time was that you don't have to take everything so seriously. I think I was very afraid of, you know, some of the topics that I'm presenting are quite heavy. And I'm talking about, you know, my own story, which, you know, wasn't happy times for me, but that you could still talk about mental health in a positive light. You could still get across really important messages without it being like, you know, the somber and only educational talk.
I mean, when I was in high school, like, I don't know if mental health was really talked about. I think afterwards people were talking about like, oh yeah, I struggled with anxiety. Oh, you too? Yeah. Like it was a thing no one mentioned. Like we all just kind of suffered alone. So this is so, so good. I'm so happy you're doing this.
Thank you. Yeah, it is something that a lot of people don't talk about. And you even see the students come in and there's like a discomfort of, you know, they've been prepped that they're having a presenter who's going to talk about their mental health journey, and it's like so serious and you can see on people's faces that they're like, oh okay, like let me like buckle in for this intense talk about mental health. But I've started to approach it just on the note of like mental health affects everyone. Like if you have a brain, you have mental health. So let's like, why are we making such a huge deal about talking about it? Let's just talk about it. I think just normalizing it, and the more I talk about it, the easier it gets. And I hope that I can portray that to other students who might be, you know, not feeling their best right now, that, you know, there's ups and downs and you can get through it and it's okay to admit that you're struggling.
Yeah. Like it sounds like you really grew into the public speaking role and like into Jack.org, like it really kind of let you express yourself, which I imagine was really important and meaningful, considering like how your high school years were like, right? Like you felt kind of othered and separate from people, and so now you have this opportunity to speak about your experience and connect with others, and so I imagine that was very kind of therapeutic and kind of like you're being welcomed, or you could express yourself a bit better.
The like personal growth that I've been able to gain from it, the people that I've met, the people that I work with on the chapter have become close friends of mine. And just like it's kind of being involved in it has kind of changed my world view in the way that I was so afraid to admit that I struggled and I still struggle with mental illness. And I feel like before my involvement in mental health advocacy, I really thought of it as something that needed to be fixed. And that I took the next low that I experienced so hard because I felt like I had done so well and I was doing good and that was good. And that kind of falter destroyed me because I felt like I thought I fixed it and I'm never going to be here again. And my view of that whole journey and mental health and illness not being like a linear thing has been completely shifted. And I credit a lot of that to my experiences with Jack.org.
That's so good. I totally understand that feeling of just failing. I think a lot of people have that too. And it's not linear. It's like all over the place.
Yeah, like it can kind of be an up and down process. Like you have better days than others, but also like better weeks than others. Some weeks you're more, you cope a bit better with your situation. Other weeks it's you're not coping as well. But like I can really see how that myth that like if you just do the right things, then it's settled, it's done, it's over, yeah, it's behind me. Kind of having that dispelled through experience is kind of, it could be disheartening because it's like, well, do I always have to keep working? I thought there was there's going to be an end date after this post-op, you know? There's
exactly. And I feel like sometimes, I mean, when you are on that high of like, you know, you're doing all your self-care and you're staying on top of stuff and you feel motivated and you feel good and you're socializing, like it's hard to be kind to yourself when that shifts, when, you know, everyone experiences things differently. But I very much feel like I could be doing everything I need to be doing, and one day I wake up and I don't feel like myself. And that's just how it is. And now I know that there are things that I can do when I feel like that to, you know, still function within my life. But some days, like, my accomplishments look different than other days, and that's okay. And that journey of being able to be okay with myself within that, because it used to hit me so hard because I felt like I was jeopardizing the good things that I had in my life, or that I was taking steps backwards, or that, like, you know, maybe my progress wasn't really progress. Maybe I was just in like a heightened state through my education and through my experiences and through being part of this mental health community. I've been able to learn that I have to like be kind to myself, and that it's okay for every day to look different, and it's okay to have good periods and bad periods. And that doesn't mean that you're not making progress, and that doesn't mean that you won't be successful. Mm-hmm. It just means that this is something that you deal with in your life. And I feel like as much as it has sometimes felt like I could be held back, I think it's actually been like my greatest strength, especially as somebody who wants to go into counseling. I try to remind myself that having these experiences and knowing that things go up and down for me, and that's a lifelong journey, will probably make me a better counselor in the end as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so, having that personal experience, definitely, you bring something to the table that, you know, no one else can bring. I'm always inspired by people's very specific stories, like what they went through, because it just seems more real to me than some abstract kind of principle or some abstract theory. And so is that what you wanted to do after your undergrad, was study to become a counselor, or...
Yeah, so this last week, actually, I have just submitted my master's application.
Yes,
happy to have that in. We'll see if this year will be the year. Maybe it'll be next year. But my ultimate goal is to do a master's in clinical and counseling psychology. And my research interests are in mood disorders in emerging adults, and identity, personal identity, and how that impacts the prevalence of mood disorders in adults. I identify as queer, and I've experienced and seen a lot of the barriers within the mental health system. And so part of my research interest is mental health in queer youth and how that could be shaped and changed and made better.
Yeah. Can I ask, what barriers do you see for people from the queer community with mental health challenges?
Oh, I have so much to say. On the most basic level, even the understanding of like what a queer identity is, and, you know, that term and why people use it or what it means to people, a lot of people in our society don't have an understanding of. So on that like most basic level, then you have a discrepancy between, you know, the people living that experience and the appropriate services to meet those needs. The other thing is, you know, queer people often feel, I mean, I can't speak for every queer person. I can speak from my experience, which is that I've often felt, you know, not included with straight people and not included with gay people. And like, where do I fit in this whole thing? And I just want to be me and like what I like, and not having kind of like a resource that's saying like, here, you can access this. This is for you, and someone here is going to understand the experience you're going through. Shifting those norms so that everything is accessible to everyone in the way that they need it. And that's very idealistic, and I understand that saying it, but if I could be part of kind of implementing those solutions, I'd be happy with that. And, you know, unfortunately, like the research shows that queer youth, because of that kind of like not feeling like they have a place in society or not being believed by people, or stigma and misconceptions about non-binary identities, experience higher levels of mental illnesses in their emerging adulthood. I'm part of that statistic, unfortunately, and I would love to just kind of fill in some of the gaps as part of my future career.
So from your perspective, what things do you think would have kind of bridged that gap for you? Like if you would have seen other people, like what could have other people have done to kind of reach out to you, or you know, what solutions do you think for you might have helped you?
I think just general education about sexual identities and not limiting that to like the straight box and the gay box and the bisexual box and this, and just being like, sexuality is this spectrum and it can fluctuate, and you can, it's, some people experience it as more fluid, and that is okay and that's normal. And just kind of normalizing that would have made a big difference for me, and has made a difference for me with the kind of efforts that I've made with the people in my own life to gain that understanding from them. I'm so afraid of coming off negative when I talk about these issues, because I do think that we've made such great improvements. I wish it was more widespread, more talked about, more normal, I guess, which is part of why I like to speak about it and why I want to go into my studies there, is just to kind of normalize it. And make it not weird, and make it not so serious, because I really don't take myself that seriously, and I don't think it needs to be a big deal overall. And I will give credit to everyone, but younger people especially, I'm seeing like such great acceptance and willingness to learn, and like, you know, wanting to learn, and that's amazing.
From your own personal experience, what would you say someone's partner can do for them when they're maybe going through a rough time or a rough drop in their mental well-being?
Ask that person, you know, point blank. You can be blunt about it. You know, I can see that you're struggling. I care about you a lot, and I want to be able to support you. What can I do? I would say be kinder than you think you need to be, and remind that person to treat themselves the same way. But I would also say maintain your own boundaries. Don't become that person's therapist. Be supportive in the ways that you can. Be kind. Ask that person what you can do, and then do what you can in a reasonable way while still maintaining boundaries, which can be hard when it's somebody that you really care about and that you really love.
It can definitely, I found for me, it's like that. I'm studying psychology right now, and it's kind of knowing when to draw that line of like, you know, I can't be you know, everything for you mm-hmm. right now. I have myself to take care of as well, but also like maybe there's someone more qualified or someone who's a better mm-hmm. resource or has a better lived experience that you can talk to. Like it can be definitely a tricky situation there. The bonds we have with people is definitely a tricky area. And so, yeah, I just wanted to thank you for everything you've said. Your story is phenomenal. I really like how you've gone through, you know, what it was like to, you know, deal with your surgery, but that, you know, through time you've found that giving your story and your time and your attention to like psychological issues has kind of helped you. And so speaks really well on you that, you know, your response was kind of to be generous mm-hmm. with others. So I think that's it's pretty kick ass in my humble opinion.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So yeah, I just wondered if there was any last things you wanted to say before we wrap things up here. I don't know if there's any Jack.org events going on campus.
Yeah, Jack.org is awesome. We're trying to maintain our events even through these virtual platforms. Next semester, we're going to have a bunch of cool things going on, including our art night that we usually have and some stress busters and hopefully a mental health panel in the winter semester. And then for me, if you're interested in some of the stuff I'm doing, I have a blog. It's called ablogbysonia.com. I talk about some of the stuff I talked about today and my journey and studies. But other than that, that's me. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been great talking to you. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
The Shinecast is hosted by Jordy Lescard and Linnea Bellaconia. We're produced by Rebecca Skelhorn, Shannon Brown, Tony Nguyen, Charlotte Trukowski, and Melanie Bowman. Editing is done by Don Matheson. Artwork by Emma Hatkopacz.
To see more of Emma's work or to keep up with the Wellness Education and Promotion Center projects at the University of Guelph, check out our Instagram page at wellness.ufg. For resources and supports available for University of Guelph students, visit us at our website, wellness.ca/shine this year. Please don't forget to rate and review this podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Beautiful. Loved it.